Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Today, we're embarking on quite an extraordinary journey.
We really are. Straight into the hidden landscape of the human mind.
Exactly, and guided by one of psychology's, well, titans. Our mission today is to crack open Carl Jung's seminal work, Man and His Symbols.
A book he specifically wrote to make his complex ideas accessible, right?
Precisely. For you, the listener, we've got a stack of insights here, and our goal is to pull out those crucial nuggets.
Helping you understand how our unconscious speaks to us.
Through that ancient universal language of symbols.
And you know, this isn't just looking back at history. It really feels like a vital handbook for living now.
How so?
Well, Jung believed our modern obsession with pure rationalism has caused a kind of a deep spiritual and psychological crisis.
Cut us off from something important.
Exactly, from our deeper instinctual parts. So this deep dive, it offers his answer, his solution.
Which is symbols.
Yeah, understanding symbols is the natural bridge back to wholeness, to meaning, in a world that often feels, well, pretty disconnected.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. Jung points to this big problem. Modern humanity suffering from a profound and dangerous spiritual and psychological crisis because we're overly reliant on logic, on the rational.
And we've lost touch with the non-rational parts of ourselves, the unconscious, as he termed it.
But his view of the unconscious was different from Freud's, wasn't it?
Oh, radically different. For Jung, it wasn't just Freud's, you know, dusty attic of repressed memories.
Right.
He saw it as this vast, creative, even wise source of guidance.
And it communicates symbolically.
Yes, through universal language of symbols.
Yeah.
And his whole point was, if we learn to understand it, really understand it,
it can help us find meaning, purpose.
Meaning, purpose, psychological wholeness, that whole process he called individuation.
So for you listening, this isn't just academic theory.
Not at all.
It's about seeing that symbolic thinking isn't some like primitive relic.
It's crucial for everyone's mental health,
yeah,
for personal growth. It's a path to becoming a more integrated human being.
Okay, so our guide here is Carl Gustav Jung, Swiss psychiatrist, founded analytical psychology.
That's him.
We know he started out close with Sigmund Freud, another giant, of course.
What a brilliant mind, yeah.
But then they had that famous split. He broke away due to fundamental disagreements. What made Jung the right person to write this book?
Well, Jung's background was just incredibly unique. He had this rare combination of scientific rigor and deep humanistic wisdom.
A doctor, but also into myths and stuff.
Exactly. A medical doctor trained in empirical research, but also deeply immersed in mythology, religion, anthropology, even things like alchemy and the occult.
Wow.
Plus 5 decades of clinical experience,
yeah,
working with real people. And his own intense personal introspection, including navigating his own major psychological crisis.
He went through it himself.
He did. And what's really special about this book, Man and His Symbols, is it was his final work, finished just days before he died. Yeah. And he conceived it specifically for a general audience. Apparently, a BBC interview in a dream convinced him it was his duty to share these ideas more broadly.
So he wanted everyone to get it.
Yes. He even co-authored it with his closest associates, people like von Franz and Jaffe, to make sure it was clear and accurate for non-specialists.
So he wasn't just focused on pathology, on what's wrong.
No, he was deeply interested in the creative and transcendent aspects of the psyche. What helps us grow, what helps us find meaning.
And Man and His Symbols became his definitive, accessible introduction to all of that.
Exactly. It's the bridge. It shows symbols aren't just old curiosities, they're living dynamic forces, essential for our well-being.
Takes Jungian thought out of the academy.
And puts it into your hands, really, for anyone seeking personal growth.
Okay, one of the first things he does is make this really crucial distinction between a sign and a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
We see signs everywhere, traffic signs, math symbols. They point to something known, right?
Right. Pretty straightforward. Red light means stop.
But a symbol, that's different for Jung. Why is this distinction so vital?
It's absolutely fundamental because it changes how we see things. A sign just points to a known meaning, simple.
Okay.
But a symbol, well, it represents something much more complex, something vast, mysterious, and not fully graspable by the intellect.
Like a cross or mandala, maybe.
Exactly. Or even a powerful image in a dream. These aren't just stand-ins for something simple. They hint at a reality that goes beyond just rational explanation.
I open a door.
To deeper, multi-layered understanding. So the book's journey is really one of self-discovery. exploring how the unconscious uses symbols.
Why it uses them for our psychological health.
And how understanding this symbolic language can genuinely transform your life.
It builds very logically, doesn't it, from our personal dream.
Outward to cultural symbols, myth.
And then lands on that process of individuation.
And it keeps coming back to this idea that modern society, by dismissing symbolic experiences, have kind of impoverished us psychologically, left us in a spiritual crisis.
Right. Which brings us to the core structure of the book. Jung wrote the first part himself, Approaching the Unconscious. What was his big idea about dreams there? He really challenged the common view, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. His radical insight was that dreams are the most direct pathway to understanding the unconscious, and they are not meaningless noise.
So what are they doing?
He argued they have a compensatory function, meaning they provide balance. They offer perspectives that our conscious minds, often quite one-sided, might be missing entirely.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Like, say you have a really inflated ego, think you're always right. You might have a dream of falling.
Ah, like a warning.
Exactly. A symbolic nudge from the unconscious towards a bit more humility. He also laid out the difference between the personal unconscious, our own repressed stuff, and the deeper collective unconscious.
That's the inherited layer.
Right. The universal human psychic structures containing archetypes, patterns like the shadow, the anima animus, the self. These are common to all of us.
Wow. Okay. So dreams are intelligent guidance. Then Joseph Henderson takes over in part two, critiquing ancient myths to us today. If dreams are personal messages, what are myths?
Henderson sees myths as basically the collective dreams of entire peoples. They express the exact same archetypal patterns we find in our own dreams, just on a grand cultural scale.
Like the hero's journey.
That's his prime example.
Yeah.
The universal cycle. Birth, struggle, slaying the dragon, getting the treasure, coming home, changed. He shows this pattern everywhere.
And his point for modern times
is that our loss of meaningful ritual and symbolic understanding makes big life transitions. Adolescence, midlife, aging much harder psychologically. We like the symbolic maps we used to have.
We've lost the container for those big shifts. Okay, so we have individual dreams, collective myths. Then Marie-Louise von Franz gets to the absolute core, the process of individuation. What is this journey, really?
Well, von Franz clarifies that individuation is Jung's term for the ultimate goal, the journey towards psychological wholeness and self-realization.
Becoming who you truly are.
Exactly. Becoming your true, whole self. And crucially, it's not about achieving perfection. It's about consciously integrating all the conflicting, messy parts of your personality.
And the hurdles are those very parts.
Precisely. The bits we'd rather ignore. She outlines key stages. First, you have to confront the shadow.
The dark side.
Well, yes and no. It's not just evil stuff. It's all the rejected or underdeveloped aspects of you. Everything you deny in yourself and often project onto other people.
Ah, so if someone's arrogance really bugs me.
Jung would say, take a look at your own unacknowledged pride, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough work.
What comes after the shadow?
Then it's about integrating the unconscious feminine side in a man, or the unconscious masculine side in a woman.
So balancing those energies within.
Exactly. Integrating qualities associated with the opposite gender for psychological completion.
Ah.
A very logical man might need to integrate his anima to access feeling, intuition.
Okay. And the final stage
is coming into relationship with the self. This is the big one, the central archetype of wholeness and order.
How does that show up?
Often symbolized in dreams by circles, squares, mandalas, sometimes divine figures. It represents the integrated, unified personality. And von Franz uses tons of patient dream examples. Makes it very real, very human.
Okay. So we've got the inner world mapped dreams, myths, the individuation path. But how does this unconscious stuff actually appear in the outer world, in culture? That's where Aniela Jaffe comes in, right? Looking at art.
Yes. Jaffe explores how artistic expression, from the earliest cave paintings right up to modern art, acts as a primary way the unconscious communicates visually.
It's not just about aesthetics, then.
Not at all. It's a vehicle for unconscious communication. She points to recurring sacred symbols, the circle for wholeness, the stone for eternity, the animal for instinct showing up across cultures, across time.
And modern art, like Picasso or Kandinsky.
She argues that a lot of modern abstract art, even if the artist isn't aware of it, can be seen as a direct attempt to reconnect with that archetypal world. It's like keeping symbolic consciousness alive in our super rational culture.
Fascinating. Okay, and finally, Jalon Jacoby brings it all down to earth. showing how this actually works in therapy.
Right, the practical application. Mm-hmm. Jacoby gives really concrete insights into how symbolic understanding is used in psychological treatment.
She uses a case study.
Yes, a detailed one of Henry, a 40-year-old engineer. Outwardly successful, but feeling empty, anxious.
A common story.
Very. Jacoby tracks his dreams over time, showing how the symbols evolved from chaos and fragmentation towards integration. The mandala symbol became really important for him.
As his psyche tried to find wholeness.
Exactly. Henry's journey is powerful because it shows how actively engaging with these symbolic messages helped him navigate a major life crisis and find a more authentic path.
It makes the abstract theory feel very real, very human.
It absolutely does. It shows the therapeutic power of this work. So if we zoom out and connect all these pieces, what are the absolute core messages Jung wants you, the listener, to take away from Man and His Symbols?
Okay, number one seems to be the vital importance of the unconscious. It's not the enemy.
Not at all. It's a vital, creative, and intelligent part of our psyche. It holds the key to wholeness, ignoring it. That leads to neurosis, anxiety, meaninglessness.
Then there's the compensatory function of dreams. They aren't just random bits of firing neurons.
No, they're purposeful. Intelligent communications from the unconscious, trying to bring balance, trying to correct our conscious attitudes, like a natural self-regulating system for your mind.
Keeps you centered, ideally. And then the big one, individuation, the lifelong journey to wholeness.
Yes, this is the central goal Jung saw for human development. Becoming an undivided, authentic person.
And it's about integrating everything.
Consciously integrating all aspects of your psyche, the light and the dark. It's not about chasing some external ideal of perfection. It's about becoming truly who you are.
And finally, that warning note, the peril of modern rationalism.
Yeah, our one-sided focus on science and logic, as valuable as they are, has disenchanted the world, he thought.
Cut us off from symbolic life.
Leading to a mass spiritual crisis, a widespread loss of purpose. A profound imbalance we need to address.
The book is just packed with lines that stick with you. Should we share a few key quotes?
Definitely. They really distill his ideas. How about this powerhouse? Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate.
Wow. That hits hard.
Doesn't it? It's saying that those hidden parts of us, if unexamined, are running the show. We make choices, things happen, and we think it's just destiny or bad luck.
But really, it's our own unconscious patterns playing out.
Exactly. True freedom, Jung suggests, comes from bringing those inner forces into the light of awareness.
Okay, here's another famous one. Everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves.
Ah, the projection insight. So brilliant.
Explain that one.
When you have a really strong negative reaction to someone else's trait, their laziness, their anger, whatever they're solely, it often points to something unacknowledged in you, your own shadow.
So irritation becomes an opportunity.
A huge one. For self-discovery, for growth, turns conflict into insight.
Love that. What else?
How about this one on symbols themselves? A symbol does not conceal, it reveals on a higher level of meaning.
So symbols aren't trying to hide things.
Quite the opposite, according to Jung. He argued they're the best possible way to express a complex reality that logic and plain language just can't capture fully.
They open doors to deeper understanding.
Exactly. Multi-layered understanding. They illuminate, they don't obscure.
And one more, capturing that individuation idea.
This one's beautiful. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are.
Simple but profound.
It perfectly sums up individuation. That lifelong journey of uncovering and expressing your authentic self, not just conforming to what others expect. It's about finding what's already in you.
Okay, this is all fascinating theory, but let's make it practical. What does this mean for you listening right now? How can you apply these ideas?
Absolutely. This is meant to be lived. Okay, first practical step. Practice dream journaling. Seriously, keep a notebook by your bed.
Write them down as soon as you wake up.
Yes, even fragments.
Yeah.
Anything you remember.
Yeah.
Do it consistently. Over time, you'll start seeing patterns, recurring symbols, themes.
And then what?
Then ask yourself, how might this dream be compensating for my conscious attitude? What balance is it trying to bring? It opens a direct dialogue with your unconscious.
Okay, good one. What about that shadow stuff? That seems tricky.
It is tricky, but crucial. Embrace your shadow self. Pay close attention to what really pushes your buttons in other people.
Those intense irritations again.
Yes. Those are often clues to unacknowledged parts of yourself. So if you hate laziness in others, maybe look at your own repressed need for rest, or maybe a hidden fear of being unproductive.
So you own it.
You consciously acknowledge your own capacity for whatever it is, anger, fear, envy, even positive traits you've denied. It makes you more whole, more integrated, and usually more tolerant.
Makes sense. What about relationships? Anima animus.
Understand interpersonal dynamics through anima animus. Recognize how we often project our inner ideals, the perfect man, the perfect woman, onto partners, especially early on.
The honeymoon phase.
Often, yes. When that projection inevitably fades, that's when the real relationship work starts. Understanding these inner figures helps you build more mature, realistic, and ultimately more satisfying connections with others and with yourself.
And you mentioned personal myth.
Yes. Cultivate a personal myth. In our world, maybe the old collective stories don't resonate as strongly, but you can find deep meaning by understanding the unique pattern of symbols in your own life, the narrative of your own individuation journey.
Like seeing your life as a story.
A meaningful story with its own themes and direction. It can provide purpose, help make sense of the past, guide the future.
And finally, how does this connect to mental health?
Critically, for mental health and emotional regulation, learning to work with symbols is powerful. Instead of just seeing anxiety or depression as symptoms to get rid of,
you see them as messages.
Potentially, yes. As symbolic communications from your unconscious about underlying needs that aren't being met. Addressing those root causes can lead to much more sustainable improvements in well-being than just managing symptoms.
Wow. Okay, this has been an incredibly deep dive. I think the biggest takeaway for you listening from Man and His Symbols is maybe just a newfound respect, a deeper appreciation for your own inner world.
I think that's exactly right. The book really offers a paradigm shift. Instead of seeing the unconscious as, you know, this dark basement full of problems,
see it as an ally.
As potentially your greatest ally in the quest for a meaningful, authentic life. And remembering that wholeness, not perfection, is the goal.
And it's achieved by courageously embracing all of it.
All parts of ourselves, yes. The easy and the difficult.
It really feels like an urgent, powerful invitation, doesn't it? To start that most important journey, the journey inward. So as you go about your day today, maybe just consider, what unspoken symbols might be subtly guiding your decisions right now without you even realizing it? What might that dream you had last night be trying to tell you about the balance in your life?
Great questions to ponder.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.